So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea, deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it, come on let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective. Mission built and made for mobility.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
Hi, I'm Phil from Waypoint Overland, and you're listening to Random Waypoints. All right, so here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Random Waypoints podcast. We'll be doing an episode every week, so like, share, and subscribe. Hit the notification bell to make sure you don't miss an episode. This week, we have very special and reoccurring guest host, Michael Ladden from Drive the Globe. What's up, Mike?
Not too much, Phil. Glad to be here. I am out here on the East Coast now in Gloucester, Massachusetts, actually.
Yes. You told me the spot you're in, and I remember when you were there before, and I was coming down from Maine, and we were possibly going to hook up. That's a beautiful spot you got there. I wouldn't share any pictures of it because I'm sure everybody asks you all the time where it is when you show pictures. Because it looks like you're way more remote than you actually are.
It's not that remote. I'm actually at an established campground, but it's kind of an old school one where it's up in the woods. So it's really, looking out my window, there's really nobody around me. It's nice. It's about a half a mile down a steep hill to the beach. And a beautiful area to hike and bike and just do a lot of stuff. So it's good. I'm going to be here for 2 months, 60 days about.
So you'll be in that's one spot almost the whole entire time that I'll be in Alaska. I've sure. got 9 days and counting before I hit the road.
Big trip.
Yes. And a lot of people have jumped on board on the last final few days. I guess they were trying to see whether the trip was legit or not. I don't know, or whether it was going to actually go through. But a lot of people have been contacting me and jumping on board. I'm going to wait till next week to announce that because I haven't made decisions on what I'm going to do before I start announcing stuff. So I wanted to get into just a couple of weeks ago when we were in Bend, Oregon. Overland Expo Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago because I drove 3,200 miles in 5 days, 5 days from Bend, Oregon to the Atlantic Ocean. So it was quite a trip getting back, but got to a lot of time to think, rest and relax across the country and look back on the Overland Expo Pacific Northwest, which was which, as you know, was an unbelievable event.
So before we get started, I just want to show something real quick. The followers that we have on Instagram and other social media, I'm learning they pay far more attention to details than I realized. And someone made the point that they've never seen me wear shorts or a short sleeve shirt. And they asked me, was I a burn victim? So that kind of freaked me out, but I could understand that that's kind of like a logical question, you know, because I do wear long sleeve shirts and pants all the time. So
look at them.
So I have a short. I'm sorry.
The president asked you if my hat was permanently attached to my head. So because people never see me without a hat really either, but, and probably never saw me not in shorts and not with Crocs on. So it's just all style, you know, what we do.
Yeah. So I thought that was funny. So, you know who you are out there. Now, you know,
awesome.
And one last thing about that. So the reason why I wear shirts and pants all the time is it's the perfect uniform for what I do. I'm not worried about sun. I'm not worried about bugs, and it actually keeps you cooler than to wear less.
Yep.
Most nomadic tribes that live in desert areas, they wear the most clothes you've ever seen. They're wearing robes and stuff wrapped all around them. So I'm using that principle. All right, now let's get back to Pacific Northwest.
You go across the Sahara, there's no skin at all. They're completely covered out in the desert. So makes sense.
And just one last thing on that. If you see my arm, you see my hand, and you see the vast difference in color. So whether you're realizing it or not, your son is baking out there in the sun.
Yep.
All right, now we're going to get into the Overland Expo Pacific Northwest. And what I want to do is it was so much that happened. It was so much to talk about. I don't want to just do this randomly. So we're going to start with the beginning of the week and do it chronologically, if you don't mind.
Sounds good.
Okay. So the first thing is we met in, where did we meet? Bend, Oregon?
Bend, Oregon at Deschutes Brewery and the distillery next door, I believe. That kind of set a tone for the week, I suppose.
Now, I've been to both of those places because, you know, I live around here. So I would like to hear what you think of one, downtown Bend, Oregon, and I would like to know what you think about Crater Lake Spirits, where we drank the whiskey, and Deschutes Brewery, where we ate. And you can
downtown Bend to me was surprisingly larger than I had expected when I rolled into town, because I had come from Wyoming, actually, from the eastern side, eastern border of Oregon. And it's pretty remote out that way. And so Bend was the biggest thing I had seen probably since Flagstaff, honestly. And so that was my first impression. As a nomad, somebody that lives full time on the road, I could say it was very evident and very clear immediately that it was a place that was very hospitable towards that group of people. I saw a lot of vans parked around. I saw a lot of availability of both on street and in town and just outside of town in the forest to camp and whatnot. So I noticed that. And the distillery was great, as we would expect, Phil. That's right. Well, they poured up. We did the flight sample. And it was like, I had to ask the guy, that's not, those aren't full shots, right? Not five of them anyways, or was it six? It was a lot.
It was six. It felt like full shots if it wasn't.
Yeah, it did, but they weren't.
I was on an empty stomach. I had been on the road since 3 o'clock in the morning. I think it was about 3 o'clock when we were there.
Yes.
And so anything I drank went straight to my head. So I was.
Yeah.
But it was good whiskey.
It was very good. It was very good. And then we went to Deschutes Brewery next door and had some food, had some couple beers. So, you know, good atmosphere there as well. So, you know, good start to the week.
So I wanted to start from there because I want to get it out in the air that I was kind of disappointed that Overland Expo did not have a Gears and Beers event. And for those listening who don't know or have never been to an Overland Expo, when you go to Flagstaff, the day before the event starts, they basically take over downtown Flagstaff. They have rigs parked up and down the streets and people are partying at all the restaurants and bars. And some people don't even bother to go into the bars or restaurants. They party right outside on the street. we did a little bit of all of that. So where I'm headed with that is I would like to see next year a Gears and Beers in Overland Expo. And I'm hoping if I put that out in the air, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good event. I think it brings the businesses in town, sort of get them involved with Overland Expo. And it gives an opportunity for those that are in town, like ourselves, a lot of instructors, a lot of media people, to get together, you know, right before the event, when it's a little bit more relaxed, because obviously once the event starts, we're all pretty busy. So yeah, I would love to see that next year as well. And to be honest, I think Bend is super conducive to that, probably even more so than Flagstaff. So
yes,
I'd like to see that.
Well, the flip side of my statement is, I'm sort of kind of glad that they didn't have it Gears and Beers for the first year. I want them to have it next year, but I'm kind of glad they didn't have it this year. And the reason is there was so much hoopla about the event. There were so many locals that wanted to do their own thing that it may not have been as popular this first year. I know a lot of people rented Airbnbs and threw parties. People like us, we went out into the forest and we hung out and partied leading up to it. There were so many people doing things that maybe it wouldn't have worked as well this first year. So that's the flip side of that. Just about everyone that I talked to was somewhere in the forest near us. We just didn't know where they were. So let's get into the Overland Expo. So let's start with Thursday when we first got there. Now, I want to mention the first thing that I noticed about Thursday that was unusual was the first thing that stuck out to me was like, whoa, there are a lot of really nice rigs at this event. And it stuck out to me because there's always nice rigs at these events, but it seemed like there were more here. There were more really nice upgraded rigs at this event.
Yeah, the diversity of the vehicles was the best I've seen in 10 years at any of the locations. And I don't really know why that is. You know, certainly it's not as large of an event as the Overland West in Arizona, but it had a better diversity, in my opinion, of particularly a lot of DIY rigs and a lot of people that clearly use them. So maybe that's what I'm looking for here, is that it looked like there were more vehicles there where people actually get out and do stuff and use them. And you and I have kind of harped on that in the past about, you know, whether it's a rig where people are actually getting out and adventuring, or they're just, you know, going to the grocery store. But definitely that. My first impression on Thursday was, oh my God, there's grass.
Yes.
I know it's not here, but there's grass.
Yes. I even had people comment on my Instagram. The first thing they noticed in the pictures was they was like, wow, grass, lots of grass, thick grass. And you know, there's different grades of grass, the kind of grass they're using. And I'm not a grass expert, but it's that grass that it seems like it was made for events to absorb water so it doesn't get muddy, and it's thick, it's comfortable on your feet if you walk barefoot. It's kind of hard to describe it, but it's not your regular grass that you have on your front lawn.
The venue was the best that I saw in my 10 years of Overland Expos, and I would say, I don't know how many different venues I've seen, maybe I don't know, probably almost a dozen, right? Because there's been a bunch of different ones in the East. There's been a bunch of different ones in the West. So it was made to have events there. It had expansion possibilities. It was had good infrastructure. It had buildings. It had walkways. It had lighting. It was a good looking place. So that was what I noticed immediately upon going in on Thursday. Was the venue, you could know within the first 10 minutes that this place was solid.
I agree. It looked like it was designed for Overland Expo. And with that design, one of the things that stuck out to me was no matter where you were, you could get to other places fast because it was built in a circle. So wow. Once you got to that hub, you could like get to wherever you needed to go. Whereas at Overland Expo West, you better hope where the next place is you got to go is close, because you could be walking for blocks.
Yeah. I mean, that is the difference. And I think West, maybe I don't want to say this, but that venue site has almost been outgrown by the size of the event at this point. Because if you were camped out in, we call it a Gen Pop, and you got to get to the other side, say the vendor side or something, or even the food truck where the bar and the happy hour and the Big Ten is sort of on one side, but you could be on the totally opposite side. Where in Bend, it was, that started in the middle and it worked its way outward, and that was definitely something nice to see. A lot of buildings too. I mean, I had the opportunity to be parked sort of near the classrooms and the buildings. I guess obviously they had, animal fairs there, or 4-H or something, because there's cow building and pig building and whatever. Mm-hmm. But all those buildings could be utilized potentially as an expansion thing too. And a lot of infrastructure, like showers and real bathrooms and, I could go on and on, but suffice to say, we love the events venue. I mean, that was clear.
I agree. So I'm sure you've already read the official number is 16,000 people showed up. Weird thing for me, I know that number is pretty much right, but it didn't feel like 16,000 people because of the way the venue allows everybody to be spread out. You never felt like you were cramped or crowded. You never felt like overwhelmed. So
the floor was good. Yeah, the floor was good. The pathways were wide enough. I think the way that it was set up, I don't know that I would change too much about that. I like the way that it was set up. I mean, I heard, some negative stuff, from a couple vendors where, there was, whether or not it was busy or not busy, a few of the ones I know that said that, it might've been a little bit slow, and parts of the vendor section, they also, I noticed everybody sold everything out pretty much. So I don't know what that means, so I don't take it all with a grain of salt, but I think you and I particularly went around to up and down every aisle at one point or another, somewhere, everywhere. And, it was a sight to watch. I actually got the opportunity on Sunday at the end, because I stayed over till Monday, and I watched them take down the whole, the whole venue, but in particular the off-road section. They came in and they put it all back to normal. They had bulldozers and all sorts of stuff going on out there, so it was quite the operation. And I kind of walked around that, and it was a good stuff. And even that was right there. Like, so when you wanted to go and do the challenge course or the moto course, they were right there. So I like that setup.
Another thing that stuck out to me and stuck out like a sore thumb to me was, out of all of the expos that I've attended, I have never seen such a high percentage of attendance to the classes. Classroom was packed. There were a lot of classes where people were literally standing up and people were outside of the tent because there was no room inside the tent. So that really stuck out to me. I was actually glad to see that, because the two things that I push more than anything is social and education. So it was great to see that there was such an interest in the education and had some of the best instructors there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes to the point that we just talked about a little bit. For any of you guys out there listening to us right now, if you had to choose, or you had the opportunity to decide which venue to go to, if you are somebody that does quite a lot of overlanding or lives full time on the road or does a lot of trips, I'll be honest, if you use your truck and you get out there and you adventure, I would recommend going to Bent. I think that the combination of the other vehicles to see, the people to meet that are doing similar things to you, and the attendance at the classroom percentage-wise was higher. And all those things to me indicate a more involved, serious crowd. So it's not about how many people show up, but it's how many, to me anyways, it's how many people are really there because they are really engaged in the, I'll call it the Overland world. Whereas I could say that, you know, where Flagstaff may be, you know, almost twice the size of Bend, there's definitely, I would say the percentage of serious people is probably lower. I mean, still a lot there. Don't take it saying, you know, it's not, but I would say percentage wise, Bend was the highest I've seen.
I think that's an excellent observation. And everything we've discussed so far kind of connects to that. I believe that's why when we first got there, we saw so many gorgeous, gorgeous rigs, because there's people really out there putting together rigs to go take their journeys. That's why we saw it in the education. That's why you, and like even before when we were in Bend, Oregon, in the downtown, that's a downtown set up for people who are getting out there and doing it. So the environment, definitely, I think you're highly accurate in that statement. A lot of actual doers. And I think there's a lot of doers at the West. It's just, that's their flagship show. So anybody that has any fledgling interest in overlanding wants to show up there. So, you know, it's kind of like Walt Disney World. You got to take your kids once, whether you're interested or not. So I definitely agree with you on that. So we're at Friday now. The day is over. Happy hour. I liked the way that the happy hour area was designed and where it was put. No matter where you were a quick, brief, short walk to get to it, whether you were in camp, whether you were in the vendor section, wherever you were, it was easy to get to. It wasn't hard to find. I liked the size of the tent. I liked the drinks. I liked the shortness of the line. And it was just fun looking around. It was a who's list of people who were just standing around laughing and joking and drinking beer. So I enjoyed it all the way around.
Yeah, I liked it because, like you said, it was in the middle. So you could get to it. It being a circle, you could get to it from anywhere. And it's kind of set up a little bit higher. So no matter where you were at the venue, you could definitely tell that that's where you were, you know, going to head to get your happy hour on for each day of the expo. So I enjoyed that as well. Great opportunity. I think some people miss that. I always try to engage in the happy hour each night, if nothing but to just sort of wrap up the day and get out there and shake hands and see people. And I would encourage people to do that because, you know, there were some other things that, you know, I hate to say it, but I found out after it was an instructor happy hour that I don't know. I didn't even know about. Maybe my bad, but apparently that didn't work. I guess I wasn't the only one that didn't show. Nobody did. So there's, you know, so there may have been some, you know, I don't know, the first year or just some, you know, communication challenges as you would expect for any kind of big event like that. But, you know, that's kind of the way I look at it is the day divides up. 8 to 5 is, you know, whether you're going to class, whether you're an instructor, you're teaching a class, or you're a media, you're getting out there and seeing people and seeing things and, you know, filming people or whatever, or you're an attendee that is interested in products and wants to check out certain vendors or all the vendors, or you really are into the skill set where you want to go out and do your, you know, your off-roading training, winching and stuff on the course or your motorcycle thing. So there's sort of blocks and then you get to the happy hour phase and then you get into sort of you know, nighttime, which at this point we're usually all going to be tired and ready for the next day. But that's kind of how I break up my day at Overland Expo.
So I want to give a tip to attendees. There's a large portion of attendees that only come to these shows to see their favorite YouTube person or somebody they follow on Instagram, some world traveler that they've been following, and it's a chance to meet them. And my tip is go to happy hour. That's the best time to meet them. That's when they've taken off their professional hat. They're relaxing. You can actually have a real conversation with them versus the, how do I say it? They're more into their character when they're at a booth, for lack of better words.
And happy hour is one of those opportunities. There's a couple vendor parties that are sponsored at some of the a couple of the vendor tents that are advertised, and then you know, maybe also segues into something that Phil and I have had a passion for and done, because that's kind of what I'm about, is trying to get people to meet where they normally would not have. And I'll let you go that direction.
All right, so let's just jump right into it. I've been kind of anxious to get to this anyway. So let's get to Saturday. Saturday was the opening for regular attendees to walk through and see the vendors and everything. They had the Redark happy hour. And after that, they had, I don't know the name of it, but the Moto Festival Moto Party or the Moto Raffle. I think it's a Moto Raffle. Moto
Party, it benefits... oh boy, I should know this, and I'm spacing it right this second, but it's a charity event to raise
Rider Justice Motor Party and Raffle.
That's right, Rider Justice. Yep. Okay. Yep. And they do that at all the expos, by the way. It's not just
Yes, and they raise a lot of money for good causes. I want to give a special shout out to Eva Rupert. I very, very casually know her. You know her well. And the reason why I want to give her a shout out is because she's the person who's like the MC for the Moto Raffle. And she does an awesome job. If you're not excited, if you're not up, if you're not happy, if you're not having fun when she gets on the mic and starts the raffle, you're a miserable person. That's what I think.
She's kind of the MC for the entire weekend, to be honest, because
yes,
you will see her. Out and about doing her live broadcasts on all the socials. So, I mean, she does it the whole weekend.
Yes. So special shout out to Eva. I was going to say you the man, you the woman. Now, those were the official parties. So let's get to what we really wanted to talk about. So after all the official business was done, we did what we've been doing, and we threw the bash of Overland Expo, in my opinion. It was a who's list of people who showed up. There were people from all over the world. Pretty much whoever your favorite social media person is, they were there. Your favorite explorer, they were there. Just regular attendees were there. People who work for Overland Expo were there. There was great food. There was great drinks. We had a mixologist. Shout out to Adventure Centric for being our mixologist and bartender for the VIP section that we had. Special shout out to him. Special shout out to Eric Hughes, known as Bird Dog Overland, who cooked
Mr. Slyer that night.
Right. He cooked for hundreds of people. So he had a little help, but he was the main man. Without him, I don't know how the party would have went. We would have had a bunch of hungry people. I also want a special shout out to Timbo Tusk, Jerry. Jerry always supports us with the Scottles, with his crew. They always come dressed up in onesies as elephants. He always shows up. They always give us great support. So I want to give a special shout out to him too. So what do you think about the party that we threw?
So let's rewind a little bit back a few years. You and I kind of started this. This has been going on for a while. And originally, we wanted to get together kind of social media influencers.
Whoa. Let's wind back even more than that. You were throwing these parties before I jumped on board.
That's true, yeah.
You were throwing these parties. Matter of fact, that's sort of how we met at Overland Expo East. You invited me. This was before the COVID. You invited me to drink at one of your parties.
Yeah.
You also invited me to do your party at Vermont Overland. So I just wanted to get it out there that this is something that was originally your baby by yourself that you were doing, and it was already getting popular and growing. All right, back to you.
It was always, I'm glad you said that, because it was always about grassroots. It was always about trying to get people together. And, you know, in the beginning, it was kind of like it was a DIY showcase vehicle area section thing. And some people that we knew, and then it kind of grew to be a little bit more about media influencers or people to sort of like-minded people to come together to discuss what they're doing with Expo. And it was kind of like a reunion, because over the years, been doing it so long, you know, we know so many different people. But more importantly than that, it grew to involve other people from the outside, because it's great that we all can have a family reunion, and you know, and you and I know each other, and you know, yeah, we know different people, but every year and every event, there's more people that join the group. So, and that's the whole idea, is you bring new people in, new blood. But the most important thing about this has always been that it's grassroots, and it's not official. It's not really a vendor thing. We're not raising money for charity. We're not doing anything. All we're doing is trying to bring together people to meet. And I think the most important thing to consider about the whole thing is that the next day, I'm sure you got a zillion, because, you know, this year we kind of, so it grew to a point where it's, you know, it was sort of, you know, the Waypoint Overland, Drive the Globe, Tembo Tusk, Saturday night party, because it takes a team to do this. Like, it's too big for me to do. So, and then you and I, and then we were like, ooh, we better get Jerry and some more Tembo Tusks and blah, blah, blah. So, but the comment the next morning, the next Sunday morning, repeatedly, that I got was, hey man, thanks so much for hosting this, because I met blah, blah, blah. Or I never knew Jerry from Tembo Tusk, or I've been traveling for 2 years on the road, and this, you know, what's her name from whatever, just different people came together, and they follow each other on social media, but they didn't know each other before. So
right. That's
super exciting to hear that. It's connecting people in the Overland world together. And that's what we do it for. That's it. I mean, to me, that's what the goal is. And it always has been that. The problem, we're not talking about problems here, but the problem is that, where does that go? And, you know, that's something that we'll be talking to you guys about a little later, I guess, at some point. But it's grown big. And we had more than 200 people at this thing. I mean, easily, right?
Easily,
you know, and I woke up the next day realizing that, oh boy, that was a lot of people. In fact, that was more people than we had at Flagstaff, and Flagstaff's a bigger event. So the trajectory, and that also maybe plays to more serious people there, more people looking to get out and discover new things and meet, because how are you going to discover new things? The best way is meet people that have done it. You know, I ended up doing an impromptu. I'm going all over the place here, but it came off this party. I ended up doing an impromptu Baja session on Sunday. It was not on the class schedule, but there were so many people at the party that we were talking about Baja, because they'd been down there all winter, that were like, oh, I didn't get a chance to go to your class yesterday or today, because, you know, I was either teaching or doing something else. So I ended up having a class that wasn't even on the schedule on Sunday because of the party. So it's kind of weird.
One thing that stuck out to me about the party was something I learned. It was an epiphany for me. Was you just kind of assume that this person knows that person and this person knows that person. And it was shocking how people who I assumed knew each other and had known each other for years, they were like reaching out, hugging each other. And it was like, hey, man, I follow you. And yeah, I follow you too. Or they knew that they followed each other, but they had never met before in person. So there were a lot of people who met for the first time at the party. So that was something that made me feel good.
Exactly. I mean, I could tell just from my own me, overly at ease. I met Staples and Tents. I met those guys with you in Virginia. I had kind of met a couple of times Jason from Primal Outdoors, but I really talked to him because of this party in Bend. So, you know, and I've been following him for, I don't know how long, you know what I mean? So it's kind of weird, that you bring the people together like that. So, hopefully going forward, we can continue doing something like that. I've looked into other ideas about doing it because of the magnitude and, you know, last thing I want is, Overland Expo to have to put their heads in the sand like ostriches and pretend that it doesn't exist, that there's some kind of event going on.
Another thing about that stuck out to me about the party was you were mentioning the party at East when you met Staples and Tents. I noticed that, you know, sometimes people think that just because this person has 20,000, 50,000, 100,000, a million followers or whatever, that their head is all in the air and they don't appreciate others. And I remember when I was talking to Staples and Tents, they didn't know you yet. And they saw you and they were like, that's Drive the Globe. Now, they are a pretty popular couple on social media. People follow them. But you would never know it when they saw you and the way they reacted. That's Drive the Globe. And so I was like, yeah, I know him. Let me introduce him. So then I went and talked to you and then you were like, oh, that's Staples and Tents.
That's right.
And yeah. I saw that roll over into this party that we had that Saturday where there were a lot of people who you're thinking, oh, they're the big kahuna. But they're fanboys too. I tell people all the time, half the reason I got this podcast is because, yeah, I know a lot of people, but I'm a big fanboy. I'm a big fanboy. So that was something that I enjoyed.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's kind of been the intent all along. It's just, you know, like I said, it went from probably, I don't know, 8 years ago to, you know, having 12 people at a party to somehow we're going to need maybe 8 to 10 scuttles in a big circle. I want it to look like, you know, a big drum set.
So for those who didn't attend, we had 3 scuttles. We had 2 different bar areas. I had to make 3 different trips to go buy liquor because we ran out of liquor before the party. Cause we had an impromptu party on Friday that we didn't mention.
We may or may not had to have borrowed several classrooms worth of tables and chairs, but I mean, I don't know if that happened or not, but it felt like it did.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I plead the fifth.
Thanks for the club crew too, making sure that all that got back before the morning happened.
So I felt like I said, that East was a turning point for the parties. And then I believe that Pacific Northwest was another turning point. And when I say turning points, I mean, as far as the notoriety of the party, the fun that was had at the party, and the pent up want for the next party. So where do you think the direction of the parties will go, or will there even be another party? Are we throwing another party?
Um, No, in seriousness, obviously being with the Overland Expo for 10 years now as an instructor and generally being concerned with, improving the event, quite honestly, and giving people opportunity to get the maximum out of their event, whether it's classes or off-roading or seeing vendors or socializing. And, I don't want to beat the party thing because I don't imagine we should call it a party. It's really like a gathering of social, like-minded people to meet and discuss stuff. So do I want that to continue? Yes. Do I not want to get expelled out of Overland Expo for having parties? Well, not really. So, I've had some dialogue, with some Overland Expo people. And, we're tossing around a bunch of ideas. Because I think it's something that they may be missing out on.
Yes.
As an event group, I think that, yes, there's happy hour every day. Yes, you can go to, say, the moto party on Saturday night if you're a motorcycle person. It's hard to get tickets, and not everybody goes to that. It's not open to everybody. And that's a different group of people, too. And then there are several, usually, vendors that host. I don't know if I want to call them. I guess they're not happy hours because they're after happy hour, right? So they're parties, right?
They're parties.
And but I think that so I'm going to tell you what I think sets us apart from what they're doing. And I think that some people are, I don't know if leery is the right word, but they are skeptical of a party that's hosted at a vendor because there's some kind of hidden agenda, if you will. I mean, I'm not suggesting that there necessarily is, but when it's at Honda, or I'm just making that up, but like if it's at the perception is it's different.
All right, there's an agenda.
We don't have an agenda clearly, and we take a different angle of inviting people or passing the word around. It's very grassrootsy. So, and ours obviously is. Over the years has been hosted largely in the DIY showcase vehicle section, which by the way, gathers an interesting group of people anyways, because these are people largely that many of them, a high percentage of them are either living in their rigs full-time on the road and, or have built them. And it's a different group. So that group comes together and essentially is I'll call it our team, to bring a larger group of people together for all over Expo. So that's what's different about what we're doing. And I think that there may be some opportunities for Expo to get involved with that kind of thing. I don't proclaim to know what the answers are or the best way of going about that. But, and I think that leads me to the second thing that I brought up was that I think they might miss the boat a little bit on some of that group I just described, the nomads, the full-timers, I'm not sure what the word is, maybe open them up or give the attendees a better ability to contact them, which I think is what our party is doing. So, there are other ideas we've tossed around to maybe do that. Because I do think it's important because after all, the ultimate step to a lot of these overlanders is to do it on a more aggressive, more long-term basis, whether that's four wheels or two wheels or whatever. But a lot of them, like you, going to Alaska for a couple months, that's, I think, a lot of people's dream, right? So, and those are the people that, particularly that attendees that are looking to advance to that level want to talk to. And that's what you're not getting necessarily at happy hour, because happy hour is for everybody. You know what I mean?
So you agree.
How do you know who's who? And you're not getting that necessarily from vendors or the moto party is for motorcycle people largely. So if I'm just the guy that has a Jeep that aspires to go to Alaska for 2 months, I'll tell you what, the best place that I could find an expo to meet those people is generally in the DIY showcase vehicle section at our party.
Right.
Because that's kind of what we've developed over the years. And I do think there's a large group of those kind of people. And I think that that's maybe where that's their opportunity at Expo to do that. And I don't know that obviously it's not official. So maybe there needs to be more official ways of doing that. And I'm not trying to not say everything that I think, because I say everything I think. I'm really trying to think out loud what could be, how we can improve and how Expo can improve. And maybe we can do it together.
And I understand the difference between our party and the happy hour, and I think both of them are necessary.
Agreed.
You used the word agenda, and I'm going to refute that a little bit and say that I absolutely have an agenda. People were kind of laughing at me at the beginning of the party when I was serving drinks, because some people came with their friends and they were standing off to the side, and I made sure everybody had something to drink or something to eat. But I also, over and over again, I said, there's only one rule. You can't just stand here and talk to people you came with. You've got to talk to other people. And then I didn't just leave them. I made sure to take them to somebody and say, hey, this is Jim. Jim, this is John. Or, this is Jill. That's not going to happen at happy hour. There's no room for that. The point I'm making is, you're able to drop your mask. You're able to, maybe you're an introvert. Maybe you're not that person who's going to just walk up to somebody, but we make everybody talk. We make everybody socialize. We make everybody important. That if you show up, you're just as important as I can't think of the lady's name, but we had the lady who's got like several million followers, and she's been on BBC TV and stuff like that. And the majority of people that were sitting around with her were just regular people. And unless someone told you who she was, you didn't know who she was, because she wasn't, hey, I'm.
She was just like the rest of the people, yeah, having a frozen margarita coming out of that machine.
So yeah. That's another agenda, that I don't care how many followers you got. I don't care where you've been. Everybody's saint is the same here. And that's important for both sides. People who are celebrities, generally, it's an opportunity to exhale when you're around people, and you can just be yourself and have just regular conversation. And then on the flip side, the attendees that were there, it's a breath of fresh air to be able to have a conversation that's not structured with these people. So.
Yeah, exactly. Which
I think there's a place for both.
I agree. And that's what sets it apart from a classroom or a, let's say the film, I don't call it the film festival, but a presentation scenario, which is more formal. This is like you said, this is like you got your hair down and your hat off, and you can just, can shoot the bull. And by the way, the other thing that it offers is a time slot, because we're at the 7:30 and later time slot, which is after happy hour. So, it's after a lot of other things have already occurred. So for those that are still looking to do something at nighttime, it's an alternative. It offers them, because there's not a lot of Expo, to my knowledge. I could be wrong on this, other than the film and the moto party. I don't know that there's anything on the schedule at night or later.
No.
So this gives people something to do.
Right. And
it's another opportunity.
Another benefit, in my opinion, with the party that we had was, you will get some things that you're not going to get during the rest of the day. Like, I'm totally about education and taking classes, but at the party, I heard people giving each other coordinates. Don't go this road. There's a fire ban here. There was pertinent information that was gained about trips, tips given. People know about my trip to Alaska. That's in a few days. I met several different people who are also going to Alaska that we're going to hook up with and do things with. And that wouldn't have happened at any other portion of the event. So, you know me, I'm stuck on this social thing. I think it's very important.
To me, that's the number one thing that Overland Expo offers is the social thing. Because that's what, by the way, that's what's going to grow the event. Is this because look, everybody goes for a reason, right? And most people, just by the nature of humans, are social. They go to see people that they know, to meet new people, to find out things. That's why they go to class, because they're social. They want to know. People ask, you know, questions one after another. In my Baja sessions, as an example, they're asking, they want to know about Baja. They want to know, what did you do? Where could I go? So that they're plugging in. And then, you know, they take your card. I mean, I gave out, I have 1,000 business cards probably. And, you know, people have contacted me since then saying, hey, Mike, you said something about this. What's the best route? What was the border crossing I should take? But that's the social element. That's, without that, Overland Expo doesn't happen. It just doesn't. You're not going to get this group of people just to go look at vendors, because that's an expo. You can go to the Civic Center inside to do that. That's not what this is about. Right.
No social, there's no reason for me to attend. There's no reason for me to attend whatsoever. Right. But some of my greatest experiences, some of the funnest trips I've gone on, some of the biggest plans that I have in the future, all are connected to something to do with Overland Expo in one way or another.
The reason that you and I are on this podcast right now together is because of Overland Expo. So right. I totally agree.
Right. Right. And so that's a good example of where some people, you meet them, you talk, and you immediately hit it off and you go on a trip. And then there's some people you just like, wait a minute, I keep seeing this dude. everywhere that I go that's happening, he's there. If it's the cool thing to do, I see him there. So there'll be some people that you meet and you'll hit it with right off the bat. And then there'll be people who you just like, we're too much alike not to get to know each other.
Yeah.
We're too much on the same page.
So we can wrap up the party thing by, and the reason that we spend so much time talking about this, I think, is because it's not about the party. It's even bigger than Overland Expo. It is the concept in Overlanding of meeting people and learning stuff and being able to go out and do your own exploration based on some things that you've learned. And that's what Overland Expo is critical to. And our component of the party within Overland Expo is a piece of that as well. So that I kind of want to bring it all together that way. But that's kind of what we're talking about here.
And the reason I was focused on it is because I often hear from people that, I don't want to go to Overland Expo. That's just some big vendor thing. And I'm not some big social media person. And I want people to understand, if you're there sincerely to learn something, if you're there sincerely to enjoy other people, it's there. It's there.
Yep.
So are you going to be going to the next year's Pacific Northwest? I'm assuming that you're going to next year's.
My plan is, that's something that I can't talk about quite yet, but I can tell you, what I can tell you is because I got to put a YouTube video out kind of explaining what's going on. Cause I get, people are asking constantly, Mike, I thought you were going around the world. What's going on here? You seem to be going or circling the United States here. So what I will tell you is right now, my plan, yes. I have made the decision based on a couple things that I will not be taking the Pan American Highway south this winter. So I am going down to Baja in October, and I am planning on coming up into the Western United States for next summer. So to answer your question, yes, I plan on going to Bend. Yes, I plan on going to the Overland Expos. And no, I do not plan on going down the Pan American. I'm putting that off to the following fall. I have a surprise reason. I have something big going on in January of this year, which is going to be interesting. So, but there is a reason why I'm not going to continue down There's a lot of reasons. There's still some shipping issues. There's a bunch of other issues. But to answer your roundabout way, yes, I will be at Bend next year.
It sounds like so you'll be in Baja when I'm there. You'll still be there during New Year's?
Yes, I'm going to be in Baja.
I'm throwing a party. You got to come to the party in Baja. If you ain't at the party, oh my God.
I will be
talk. So if you're going to be there New Year's, then we got to talk about this.
Well, we'll talk about it. I will be in Mexico from October to probably to shortly before Overland Flagstaff.
Yep. Yeah, I won't be there that long. I plan on being there 10 days before New Year's. And, I'm going on this Alaska trip. That's 60 days. Then I plan on leaving and going to Overland Expo East, which is on the other side of the world from where I live. Then I got to get all the way back home. So I have very little time to recuperate for this Baja trip. So I literally have even thought about shortening the time. But I know it'll be hard to shorten the time once I get there.
Yes.
Yeah, we got to talk about that offline. We got to do something really big, something amazing. So how are you enjoying being back home on the East Coast?
So the East Coast is interesting. It's difficult from a nomad perspective. It doesn't have the facilities. It doesn't have the vast openness that the West offers. It does not have, it is not nearly as friendly to, nomad overland van lifers. It's more expensive. There's a lot of things that the East is problematic. I mean, it's beautiful here in New England. There's a lot of great stuff. I'm using the 60 days really as a retooling. I've got a number of projects I'm doing on the truck. I worked on a motorcycle all day today. I did some bag switch up with some Moscow Moto stuff, and I'm working on a bunch of stuff with the motorcycle. I'm going to be doing a different thing with the mount on the truck for the bike. I got projects on the truck. I got all sorts of stuff. So I'm really, it's kind of working 2 months. So I'm effectively off the road, meaning that the truck is not moving very much, but I'm keeping busy.
Same here. I've been trying to cross my T's and dot my I's on every little detail about this trip that I'm leaving on in about a week. Been getting my rig fine-tuned. I could have just left. I could just go as is. But you always want to do some special little things for your trip. And I've tried to add some little details to make it more comfortable and easy for myself. I'm looking forward to getting out of here. I'm mixed emotions when I get closer to the time to leave, because I'm leaving someone. I'm leaving my spouse. I'm leaving my wife. I'm leaving someone that I love. But I'm really eager to do this trip. This has been a trip that's been in the making for a long time. I'm really looking forward to this. You're going to have to do some guest spots with me live while I'm in Alaska too.
Oh, I would love to. That would be awesome. Alaska's great. I've done it twice. And you could spend a lifetime up there. Unfortunately, your lifetime has to be pretty much in July and August.
So
it's up in September. But
I've been to Alaska in the course of my whole life 5 times. This will be the first time that it's an overland trip. I've never crossed the Canadian border, drove through Canada, and then drove there. I've either taken a ferry or I've taken a plane. So this is totally different. I don't even count those trips. When people bring up Alaska, I just say, yeah, I've been to Alaska. I really don't. It's no big deal to me. This is the big deal to me.
Right.
Because I really plan on trying to explore as much of Alaska as I possibly can in 60 days. And I know that people are like, wow, 60 days. But I'm like, wow, I wish I had more time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, at first I was going to, on the way home, I was going to immediately drop down, get into America, and then drive to Overland Expo East. But then you posted on your Instagram your route as to how you got home, and you basically took half of it through Canada. And I was like, that, why don't I do that? Why don't I do that? So I'm just going to basically from Alaska, just go diagonally through Canada. And I don't know where I'm going to enter yet.
No, but I mean, that's a, I drove a number of years back. I drove across Canada through, well, I guess all the provinces that go along that meet the U.S. border, from all the way from Edmonton all the way across to Montreal, basically. And I mean, Canada is such a beautiful country.
I agree.
So many things to see, you know, a lot less traffic, so many places to camp. Yeah. I mean, that's the way I kind of did it on the way, my way home from Ben, just to stay as far north as possible. The U.S. was having a heat wave. I was trying to avoid temperature.
Oh, that was
smart. It's just beautiful. You know, it's just, it's a beautiful trip. So, yeah.
I had something I was going to ask you and it just totally left my mind. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wanted to ask you about the film festival that they have at Expo. Have you ever attended the film festival, or has you being an instructor prevented you from?
No, I've attended it before. Yeah.
So
there's a lot of interesting. It's one of the best things about Expo, honestly, is watching, is being able to plug into what some of the other people's adventures, because there are people that show up at Expo that have done, they're not what you and I would refer to as baggers, where they get to the trailhead, they take a picture of their butt with some trees behind it. And, you know, they've actually done it, you know, whether it's across the world, across Africa, across Asia, you know, whatever the film is or whatever they're talking about, their presentation is there's some really cool people.
So this happens every time when I talk to you, we go on this left turn. And I'm about to take a left turn in this conversation. We keep mentioning baggers, but we've never explained what a bagger is. So should we get into what a bagger is?
Sure.
All right. So I came up with the word, but I would like to hear.
No, we're sitting around a campfire one night. We're talking about.
Go for it.
Yeah, it was kind of talking about the problem. Well, I mean, I'll paraphrase it the way I saw it, but we're kind of talking about the problem with social media. And if you flip for 20 minutes, you pick up your phone and go through Instagram, you know, and I follow tons of, you know, overlandy people or whatever. Anyways, if you could flip through your phone and you could find pictures of all sorts of stuff. And as we all know, Instagram isn't reality, right? Instagram isn't, you know, I mean, I'd be more interested in meeting the person and seeing whether or not their truck has scratches on the side of it, whether it looks like they got dents, whether they, you know, whether they have a story that they could actually realistically explain to me. And I could be like, oh yeah, I've been in that part of Utah. Yeah, that sounds right. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot of people that, I'm paraphrasing from, somebody else that had sent me an email a couple of days ago, I think called them, I wasn't using the word baggers, but they were calling them the butt shots, where, you know, you go, yeah, here we go. We're going to, here's a nice tree. And let me see if we can, I think we can get a good shot here. You know, but bagger basically means somebody that isn't really doing it. They want you to believe that they are doing it, but they're not. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but what I don't like, I don't like portraying doing something that you're not doing. You know, right. If you want to go get a beautiful shot of your butt with the Teton Mountains behind you, have at it. I don't have a problem with that, but then don't go tell me that you took 3 days to get to your campground and you had to use the winch 6 times. I mean, we all know that the trail, the road up to the campsite is, you know, you could go with a 2-wheel drive Mazda. So, I mean, that's a bagger.
So I'm going to give an example. If people haven't gotten it clear in their head yet what a bagger is, I'm going to give them a clear cut, true story example of a bagger. So if you scroll through my Instagram, the last time I was in Colorado, I posted a photo of me at the beginning of Black Bear Pass. You know, when you first get off the highway and it's got the little sign and you're going to start the trip, right?
The sign that says, you know, four-wheel drive only, blah, right. blah, 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 blah. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
But if you read the post, I said, oh, I'm very disappointed. I made this trip all the way to Colorado and there's been a rock slide and rain and everything, and they've closed Black Bear today. So I'm not going to get to go, right? Well, I keep strolling through my, after I post, I scroll through my Instagram, and there's people who've taken the identical photo that I took at the beginning of the road, and they didn't know that the road was closed. So they've posted saying, oh yeah, we did Black Bear Pass and it was a little scary, but we completed it. And that was impossible. It was impossible. It was impossible for you to have done that. But they have the photo that they're going to show everybody that they did Black Bear Pass. So they bagged the photo, but they didn't do it. And that's where I came up with the word baggers.
That's right. So we now call them baggers.
Right. And there are a lot of them. I would say there are a majority of them. So
you got a better chance of meeting a bagger than you got of getting that nice shot at a bison by not getting out of your car.
And for those listening, it's not just the little guy. It could be the million follower guy. It doesn't matter. Across the board, it's a bunch of baggers. Some of your most famous YouTubers are baggers. But we'll leave that alone.
We'll leave that alone. I will tell you, I posted a picture of, actually, I think it was me standing at right next to where my campground was in Wyoming, outside of Jackson, overlooking the Tetons. And I got like three people that sent me a message saying, hey, you know, your Photoshop skills are getting better. It looks pretty good. I didn't Photoshop and I'm standing there. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. But I think it's so prevalent that people are doing baggery out there. Yeah, and now people assume that you might be bagging. It's like, no, that was real. That you can actually, you can go there too. And by the way, you can do it with two-wheel drive and you don't need to like off-road to get there or anything, but you can get that picture too. But it was real. I didn't touch it. I didn't do anything.
And a little trivia for those who don't know, people ask me about my license plate. It says everywhere.
Yeah.
And it basically stems from this because there's so much skepticism about whether you've really done anything or gone anywhere because there's so many bangers out there.
Yeah.
That was my statement to the world. Because people would always, you know, so where have you been in that thing? Sarcastically. So where have you been in that thing? And my answer is I've been everywhere. So, and that's what the license plate is about. Because I'm trying to distinguish myself from the baggers.
And not to get on negativity, though, but like, I mean, there are, unfortunately, there is.
Well, no. This isn't negative. The reason why I want to talk about this is because I want a person starting out not to be looking at social media and thinking, I can't achieve, I can't do what I want to do. These people are so far ahead of me. So I'm trying to give a positive
that's why I'm trying to get to that's what I'm saying is that like that there is a you have to get you have to ignore the negativity. And as an example, Tiny House Giant Journey just did about 3.5 weeks ago did a video on my truck, which I was shocked to see. I think this morning it's hit 1.1 million views.
And where is that at? Where can you see that at?
It's on YouTube. It's a Tiny House Giant Journey. It's a rig rock around of this truck. Okay. And it's got 1.1 million views on it. Now, as you would expect with that many views, there's also thousands and thousands of comments. And I'm always like the guy that like tries to answer as many things as possible on all, certainly on all my social media stuff. It's a little overwhelming on their channel, but and I've answered a bunch, but you'd be surprised at how many I'm going to call them negative. And that's why, You know, there's probably been, to your line of questioning here, there's probably been at least, I don't know, 10 or 20 that go, it doesn't go anywhere. That truck never goes anywhere. So I'm like, well, I said, you better look into it a little deeper and look at some of my pictures and stories and the places I've taken it, because that's not true. But, you know, to stay positive, there are plenty of people out there that are not baggers. I know a lot of people that actually use their stuff and go out and explore and see it. And it, and when I say that, it doesn't mean that we're wheeling or going full wheeling or going down something that, like, you know, we've got to basically strap a parachute to our back and pray that we're going to make it and have our SOS phone out. I'm not suggesting that we all have to be nutty, crazy, you know, doing, like, you know, just insane stuff. But, and that's what I'm trying to get to, is like, you can do a lot of, the world is an amazing place. You can do a lot of things. Don't let negativity get in your way. Don't let the people tell you that, you know, you can't do this, or you're, or this person's not, or Phil's not doing that really. Well, Phil is doing that. Listen to Phil when he goes and does something. If he goes to Alaska, he's a good guy to listen to. Get, you know, you got to kind of wade through all the BS. But, you know, the bat, when we talk about baggers, we're, you know, that's a different, there's a couple different groups. There's kind of like the mean group that is just like, either they're jealous or they're, or whatever, they're, or doubting or not believing. And then there's the bagger group that maybe part of that is what's contributing to this other group, is that they're just taking these pictures and they're not really doing it. So then this other group out there is going, oh, Mike doesn't take his truck anywhere. Well, maybe they've been watching too many bagger pictures with somebody else. Who knows? But bottom line is, if you want to do something, you can do it. You know, ask somebody that actually does it for a real review of what you want to do, because I think it's likely that you're going to find out that, contrary to what you may see or may not see, a quote bagger post, you probably can do it a lot easier than they're portraying it to look like.
So one last mention about our party. I see it, Dad. There were very few baggers at our party.
That's right. That's right. And why is that? Because we're hosting it in a DIY nomad section where these people, a lot of them, are living like full time on the road. They can't bag anything because, I mean, they're just doing it. They're doing it. And, you know, yeah, maybe they're getting to a trailhead and not going down the trail all the time, but I guarantee you sometimes they are. They got to. I mean, I got stuck. I was out in Utah somewhere and I'm like, I didn't really expect that I was going to go somewhere that I ended up going because, hell, I'm already here. I guess I got to do this now. And then I got done with that. Oh, geez, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have done that if I knew that was there, but I did.
All right. And let's be frank. We also didn't invite any baggers to the party, too.
That's true.
Because there were some big names that I did not invite, that I know, that other people would have been like, well, that's a dream person to have at your party. And I was, no. So if you want to, if you're somebody popular and you know me and that you didn't get an invite from me, then, you know, I consider you a bagger. The gauntlet has been thrown down.
We'll talk about that later.
Huh?
We'll talk about that later. And we won't, at the next party, we're not going to, if you don't get invited, you're not going to get the no bagger sticker.
I like that. Hey, we'll talk about that later. Let me write that down.
Sorry. Anyway, we're just having a good time with it.
Yes. So the main thing that I wanted to talk about in this particular episode of the podcast was, we went to the Pacific Northwest Expo. We learned, we party, we socialized, and I think we're better for it.
Agreed.
And definitely, if you have the opportunity to go next year, at least I think that it would be smart for you to go next year.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
And if you live,
and while we're on that, I hope if you're have the opportunity or you're out east, love to see you at Overland Expo East in Virginia this year, because we'll be there.
That's right. I'm gonna be zooming all the way from Alaska to make sure that I get to Overland Expo East. You know, we the parties are going like this. We got to continue having them go like that. We'll talk offline about some of the ideas I have. And I know you got a bunch of ideas too, and you've been talking to some people. So we're going to wrap up this episode of the podcast. You know me, I got to talk to my audience real quick. And everybody, you already know what I'm going to say. Stay safe, tread lightly, and hopefully I'll see you here or on a trail soon.